Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, thank you for joining us at the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I am here with the Florida famous Sunshine State Seekers.
What's up?
Greetings.
All right. A lot of variety on that one. So we're talking about some of the coastal parks in the Emerald Coast just in time for summer. So, yeah, I've been there. A lot of barrier island parks, things that they have in common that are different from the area of Florida that I live in is beautiful sand and just these picturesque waters that are light and colored. Maybe that's probably why they call it the Emerald Coast, I imagine.
It's really difficult to describe the color. As you come up over one of those boardwalks and you see it, then you'll know why.
Or like just driving in on some of the higher up bridges and stuff, you see over the horizon, which is like, it's breathtaking. I mean, anyone who's followed us knows that the Panhandle is pretty much one of our favorite spots in the world. We go back there all the time. And not only for like caverns and Torii and stuff like that, but the beach parks up there are just wonderful.
And the beaches themselves have this crazy white sand that I understand is the quartz that came down from the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, we imported it and ground it up.
It was a big process.
Yeah.
I did it personally.
You know, we thank you for your service. Now, I think Florida has like two different types of sand. Now, this is interesting, or maybe not. But they have the quartz sand, which ultimately came from the Appalachian Mountains, ground up, you know, and then it's this nice powdery kind of stuff, unless you're hiking on it, which most people don't do.
Then it's not as fun.
Yeah.
Well, last 30 miles of the Florida Trail.
Yeah, last 30 miles of the Florida Trail. So any through hiker, you know, it's great.
Sandy. Beautiful.
Plan ahead. And then some of the sand can be, you know, like same thing happening, but with shells. Mm-hmm. So that one is your darker, more reddish sand. And some of your beaches, they may have both. I know on some areas, if you go in like, say, I think Talbot Island, where they have areas where these, it's not really the sand, but you can see these shells, these creatures have just been crunched up and ground down. You'll see like these ribbons of red that kind of weave through the sand a little bit.
I definitely think the Gulf Coast is more known for that white powder, at least up further north, that white powdery sand.
Yes, and it has a large commercial draw because it has like gets a lot of visitation in that area. If you try and drive through there during spring break, pack your patience.
Am I correct in saying that the sand has something to do with how clear the water is too, because it filters it?
I'm not sure about filtration, and I can't speak intelligently on this at all. I think there's a number of factors because, I mean, if you go down to Miami, Key West, Biscayne Bay, I mean, it's completely different than like in Northeast Florida or even in the Panhandle. So there's some stark differences. What exactly it is, and I guess I should know. I'm not exactly sure what causes it.
I would say the intensity of the color is definitely with a direct relation to the sand. Just the way the light reflects back through the water. And it's just this bright white sand through the blue water, and it just kind of makes it glow. Very beautiful.
Oh, like an odd green color.
Yeah.
I thought they just... Oh, yeah. There you go.
The Emerald Coast?
I thought that's a good description of the color.
I thought they used more chlorine or something in Miami. I don't know. All right. So I'm sure that our listeners would like a little meat and potatoes rather than hearing us go back and forth. So what do we get? Henderson Beach. And I stopped there a couple times. And I didn't do much more because I know there's camping there. Is that correct?
Yeah. Henderson Beach has a decent campground there. And it's actually one of the more difficult ones to get a campsite at. probably due to the fact that it's located very close to Destin proper, which is a destination along the coast for good reason, because it's a really beautiful area. But one thing that makes this little piece of preserved beach stand out is the fact that it has been so developed all around it, and it's just kind of like this pristine little piece that somehow managed to grab a foothold on the coast there. And so we camped there recently with a friend and the kids, and it's got a really cute boardwalk that goes out to the beach, very pretty beach, although there's condos that you can see on each side, and they were building some, I think, even while we were there from the campground. And they had a
one major drawback.
Helicopters.
All the time. Helicopters all day long from, what, seven and, well, dawn to dusk pretty much the entire time you're there. So not the best. And maybe some campsite spots are better than others, but that helicopter was going over our campsite.
Maybe we were right next to the helipad.
Was it like police operations or attack helicopters, or what kind of we talking here?
just because it's such a heavy tourist area, and you have these helicopter tours, which I get it, but...
Well, another thing that a lot of these parks we're going to touch on have are these man-made reefs in the ocean. I can't remember what shape the one at Henderson Beach is.
I've heard of those,
but they're really cool. We've swam out to one at Topsail before. We'll talk about that later, but they're like in the shape of a dolphin. Mm-hmm. I think one's in a seahorse. I can't remember all the different shapes, but I do know that that's one of the key things that people on the helicopter tours go out to see, because you can see them from the helicopter. They're a few hundred feet from the actual coast where the beach meets the sand. But it's possible to swim out to them if you got a paddleboard or something. We've done it before.
Oh, nice.
It is, tiring, but possible. Okay. And the waters there are relatively, depending on when you go, calm. So not huge, giant waves, probably not the biggest surf destination, but definitely just for hanging out in the water, relaxing, safer for the kids. Not as many shark issues as, say, New Smyrna, stuff like that.
Certainly a great place to snorkel.
Yes.
Because the water is so clear. And then once you get out towards those reefs, there's, and again, it's kind of difficult to get out that far, but you don't even have to go that far to see all the schools of fishes and jellyfish and all kinds of interesting sea creatures under the sea.
So would you say that somebody wants to go out and snorkel those areas, they should be fairly confident in their ability to swim and handle themselves in the water?
I would also add a requirement of a dive flag.
Okay.
So we did, that is a requirement, not a suggestion. We did actually buy a dive flag just for that trip.
You're definitely going to want to have some sort of a flotation, like
we brought our paddleboard. We both hung on to the side of it and swam
out. You can't just swim out to them and check them out, really. You definitely have to plan it and look into it.
Maybe someone who's a very, very competent swimmer, but I personally wouldn't think that would be very safe, just in case you got tired or something happened. Mm-hmm. There are animals in the water, so you never know.
With the exception of one of the parks that we're going to be talking about today, I've hit most of these during like slow months when, that's what I do usually in Florida, is when I hit the popular spots when it's slow. So I haven't been in the water on most of these because I've gone in like the winter time.
Yeah.
So then we have Topsail, which I know is a very popular state park.
It is my favorite beach state park. I might say that's my favorite park for a handful of parks. Mm-hmm. I tend to categorize them. My favorite beach state park, my favorite hiking state park, my favorite historical state park. I can't pick one. But as far as beaches go, that one's my favorite for a number of reasons. One being we mostly tent camp. Now, they have RV camping, and some sites there are more fishbowl-y. Some are nice, because we actually drove around a little bit more last time we were here. But the tent sites all have their own little kind of cove. It's car camping in a sense that your car's like, what, 20 feet away from the campsite?
You can't unload and just take your stuff right out of the back. You have to haul it I don't know, 50 feet
on what site you have, anywhere from 20 to 50 feet, there's little trails that go to each site, but they're all also kind of pocketed and secluded by their own little plant life around them. So even though there might be someone camping at the site right next to you, mm-hmm. you don't really hear them or see them.
You can't see your neighbor. And you're surrounded by this magical scrub.
Isn't there a protected rodent of some sort?
Yeah, a beech mouse.
A beech mouse. So we saw a few of those there. Just really pretty, really beautiful tent campsites. They also have glamping and all that. They have cabins there too. Tons of options. It used to be an RV resort. The state protected it, I believe, because of that rodent or the mouse.
The false rosemary is everywhere, yeah, and it blooms in the early in the year. Yeah.
But one of the things that makes it my favorite one for beaches is just sometimes when you add a level of difficulty to accessing the beach becomes a little more private to you. And that's one you not only cannot drive on it, you can't park close to it. I think the closest parking is, what, a mile away?
Yeah. So if you're staying at the tent campsite, that's probably the closest you can get to being able to walk to it. And then it's like 0.9 miles from the beach, about a mile. And as far as I know, it's the only beach that you have to take a tram to get out to it.
Yeah. In Florida. So, if you want to access it, like Chris said, there is a tram. It picks up at two different locations, picks up at the main parking lot by the ranger station, and it also picks up by the tent camping sites. Mm. Which are pretty close to the RV ones as well. And then you can take that little tram, and it runs all day long. And does the tram also go to a dune lake?
They just started this year, actually. Yes. It was on a hiatus for a while. So when they originally built the tram system, they have a little road, and you can't drive any cars on it because it's just for the tram. They built a little road that goes out to a little circle to the beach, and then another one that goes out to one of the dune lakes. And the dune lake wasn't accessible by tram for the last couple of years. And the last time we visited this last year, it was twice a day.
Yeah.
Actually, they run out there and you can visit their extensive trail system, which mm-hmm. was gorgeous. And I hiked that. It was like the hike that I did was like 10 miles total. But you can definitely shorten that and check out those areas over there. Very interesting. Walking on the dunes and stuff.
Now, we visited it. I don't even know how many times we've been there now. Quite a few times. And we also got to experience it during COVID, which the tram was not running during that period of time. But it also made us do something we probably would not have normally done during that time period, is where we decided to rent bikes. It's a very popular site. That's a very popular activity at that site. They rent bikes at the campsite. When we went, the campsite was actually out. But lots of places nearby rent bikes as well, actually for cheaper than the campsite does. So pro tip, maybe shop around for your bike rentals when you get into the area. And we rode our bikes around all over the place. And that's what we used to access the beach during that period. Huge, area to park your bikes. Like, I don't even know what their capacity is for bikes, but we've seen it full before. But yeah, it's just a wonderful park.
Super fun to explore on bike or foot. And the tram driver is acutely aware of the people walking and riding their bikes up and down these little roadways. So even though it's a paved road, it's absolutely gorgeous scenery, and you can easily walk it or take your bike.
We went there for the 4th of July, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So fun fact about me, I used to work for the theme parks, and I'm kind of burnt out with fireworks. Mm. I've seen enough of them for my whole life. And that's one of the reasons for the 4th of July, I usually stay at a state park every year because they don't allow fireworks. And we were on the beach, and it was, first of all, because of the tram and how much of the land is protected, there's no development on that beach. And you look way down to your left, there's hotels, and way down to your right, there's hotels, and you can see massive amounts of people miles away.
I think it's 3 miles.
Yeah. But we were sitting there, and we could see the fireworks way in the distance, but then there was like an air show that passed right over us.
Oh, wow.
It was just a really cool chance experience that we were not expecting. It was beautiful.
So for camping too, just wanted to throw this in real quick at the end here. It actually used to be an RV resort, and they have a whole bunch of places that you can cabins, I guess they call them, but they're like modular homes.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of those. And it's probably one of the biggest campsites in the whole entire park system because it's got 170 something campsites.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Overall, and like the I said, multiple options, the glamping, the and like
it has a, yeah, it has a little glamping with the canvas tents too.
Yeah.
And then the tent camping areas, only I think about 20 sites. Uh-huh. But it's fairly easy to find a site there because it's so big.
Yeah.
Wow. Topsail Hill has, I think, over 3 miles of protected beaches. Mm-hmm. Henderson Beach doesn't have that much. And when you get to those beaches that are smaller, where you can see the development on either side, it really contrasts the value of protecting some of these beaches.
Yeah.
Developers can kind of go in and build right on top of the beach and everything else. That's exactly what they do. And there's a stark difference between the beach where there's like a condo or a resort or hotel versus some of these naturally protected areas.
And one thing, and we touched on it a little bit when we were talking about Henderson and I was talking about the reefs, and I'm just going to bring it up here again because we've actually done it at Topsail. If you want to swim out to those reefs, there are these cement pillars, almost like giant bollards. I don't know how tall they are, but there's two in a row. They're bright yellow. And when you line them up in your line of sight and swim out from there, and as long as they're lined up, you're heading in the right direction. So it's kind of a way to keep your bearings when you're swimming out there because it's a big ocean.
Yeah, like a navigation. Now, next on the list is Grayton Beach State Park. I went there less than a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. And as I go around Florida, sometimes I lose track. But Topsail Hill and a number of these parks in the coastal area, right, I believe in Walton County, have dune lakes. And I paddled in one. And they're absolutely amazing. So there's less than 5 countries in the entire world where these dune lakes occur. And a large concentration of them is right here in the panhandle, I believe in Walton County. But basically what it is it's a lake within a close proximity. I think it has to be considered a dune lake, has to be within, 2 miles of the coast. But basically it's a permanent body of water, and you get a lot of rainfall. It occurs in the lake. And after a while, it'll have like an outfall, and that's where the lake kind of busts through the dunes and empties out into the Gulf. And the tannic
the mixing of fresh and salt.
Yeah, the darker water because mm-hmm. it's not clear as it kind of goes out into the Gulf. It's like this almost. I'm not sure if it's. I imagine there are tannins that are occurring to make it darker. You see this dark water just flowing out into the Gulf. And it's really interesting. And after a while, as it empties, sometimes the dynamic forces of the beach cause dunes to form up, and you don't have that outfall anymore. And then there's a separation between the beach and the lake. But it's almost natural flood control because as the waters get higher, they're going to break out and empty into the Gulf. And it's fascinating because it's kind of brackish. You'll get different aquatic life in them. And it was definitely a nice paddling experience because we launched from a boat ramp, paddled around Western Lake. There's plenty of space. It was a lot of space to paddle. And I took it right out to the beach. And, you know, when you get to the beach, I just hopped off the paddleboard, you know, and then drug my leash to it and then enjoyed the beach for a little bit. And then took it right back to the lake and up into the boat ramp. So it was fascinating, but a very rare phenomenon around the world. And there's a lot of them. There's some at, you know, Topsail Hill, Grayton Beach, and a few other state parks in that region.
There's trails in the state park systems as well that allow you to check out the shorelines of the beaches as well. I know Topsail goes out, I think it's Morris Lake, and another lake the one at Topsail, you can actually rent a kayak because they protect that one because it's the lake is kind of encapsulated by the park. They can control who accesses it. So you can't use your own paddleboard. So Ryan used his in Western Lake because that one's more, there's private property. I think it edges up against mm-hmm. it. So you can't control it as well. But the Western Lake, there's a really cool trail I did across the street from Grayton Beach that it was like a 4 mile round trip that goes to the northern edge of the Western Lake.
So not only do you have, you know, this pristine sand, the beautiful water, some of those, you know, man-made reefs, but you have these naturally occurring rare phenomena. And then we have, what's next? Camp Helen State Park. We both, we've both have traveled around and were obsessive about getting our passport book stamped.
So our stories are very similar with the experience of that one. It used to be an old camp of sorts. I don't know that much about the history, but it was hard for us to get our stamp there. Lyra helped us out on one, and Ryan got his stamp there.
Yeah. It was a resort for, I think it was the employees of the Alabama textile mill. So it was like a little resort area for them, and it must have been. That's some nice benefits if you work for a company and they got their own resort. But yeah, I believe it was turned over to the state in the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I remember stopping by, walking around, because you get some nice views of that area and just enjoying them. And then I was like, okay, let's see if I find a ranger, get my stamp. And yeah, it was quite the ordeal. But
just saying, your kid can sneak back there and grab your stamp if you see it right there. We just couldn't find a ranger anywhere when we were there.
Did you self-stamp there?
We self-stamped. We found the stamp, and a child helped us.
It was a nice ranger office that just wasn't...
retrieved the stamp. I think they were probably doing something on the grounds.
They were.
Maybe cleaning the restrooms or something like that, and we could not locate them. So,
wow. That's a nice way to paint a story where you guys both implicate a child in
hey, a potential crime. I was just there.
Well,
I don't even know her.
I may have used my my reach of my arms to go.
Not all of us are 7 feet tall.
To grab the stamp.
Self-stamp,
yeah. And then be on my way. There's a lot of state parks in that area, and I was trying to visit, them all in one weekend. And so time was of the essence. I think like you guys do sometimes, I will visit a state park, and some of them really resonate with me, and some of them really don't. You know, I'm like, okay, this is interesting, but I don't think I'll ever come back. One's like a Kissimmee Prairie. I was like, well, this is fascinating. I must come back and stay here. So that I will just visit, enjoy it for a little bit, and then if I really enjoy it, I'll come back. But sometimes I just don't. Andrews is next.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's one we have visited quite a few times, both pre-hurricane damage and after.
That's another one of my favorites.
Yes. So the camping did change quite drastically after one of the hurricanes came through. So I remember the first time we went there was a lot of tree cover. And the deer there were way too friendly.
All the wildlife there. the alligator... Pretty much all the wildlife there. That was the one where we saw the great blue heron was doing little dances and stuff for us, like trying to get us to throw food to them. And we weren't even fishing.
Typically very skittish birds. But yeah, no, it was trying to sing for its supper. And I remember, just the deer approaching us a whole bunch the whole time we were there at first. Then we went back after the hurricanes, and unfortunately it did wipe out a lot of the tree cover. So when you're camping there are different options. There are some that are a little pocketed back there that do still have a little bit of cover, but most of it is wide open. So you're going to want to bring a shade, tent or something.
It's very much a fishbowl.
Very much.
Now.
Yeah.
It didn't used to be, but it's also beautiful scenery.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like I'm not selling it, but we've been there a few times for a reason. I hear a lot of people say it's impossible to get a site there, but it seems to me that that's a campsite where a lot of people cancel last minute. So we have gotten sites there quite a few times, just like the day before, the day of. One time we drove and just got a walk-up site. And it was a site they typically kept open because I think it flooded with the tide when the tide came in, and
half
it did.
The,
it
half
did
of the flood. Site was tidally flooded, and we set up at the top of it. But yeah. And that was after the hurricane had come through and changed it, I think. But
The last time we were there, it did look like they were building a lot of the sites back up. So a lot of these panhandle sites are kind of in a constant state of reconstruction. Just to make it, more suitable for camping and things like that. You don't want your tent underwater at 2 a.m. if that's how the tides work out.
The beach there is another incredible beach. Mm-hmm. And it has these, the Gunnisons.
Yes. I'm glad you remembered what they were called, because I couldn't remember. And there's more than one of them.
The round concrete structures. There's one that they built a pavilion on at one point. Yeah. And the last time we were there, like a couple months ago, they were still trying to fix that one, mm-hmm. I guess. But there was one that was uncovered by the hurricanes.
Yeah. Right and on the beach. From what I hear, they had no idea that one was even there until the hurricane came through and took away a lot of the sand. And I remember, because we had gone there before and we came back, and I was like, what is this thing? And it's just like this cement cylinder that has like kind of like, it's kind of hollow and it's lying on its side. There's a lot of exposed rebar coming out of it, which might make it seem not the safest, but it's really cool. And lots of critters are inside of it. I've seen like jellyfish and little fishes swimming around within the thing. It's right on the, it's kind of like halfway in the water, halfway out, but very kind of dystopian looking.
What was the original use of it? Do you know?
It was a military gunnery protection for some fort that was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
One thing I think I have to mention here is the way that the peninsula comes out. So out of all of these Gulf Coast beaches, I have found personally that the way that the coastline there bends, that you're getting that perfect sort of southwestern angle to see the sunset.
Yes.
And we have seen some of the best sunsets at that park as far as like dipping over the Gulf.
Yeah, you get that bright red skyline with like reds and pinks as the sun goes down. And there's, I would say, kind of another thing to note at that beach is there's two different areas to swim. Kind of one area, what would you call that, where the water is a little calm but more stagnant? Maybe if you have kids, little kids, it's a more appropriate place to bring them. And then it kind of goes around this little sand peninsula to the ocean where the waves are a little bigger.
There's an inlet.
Yeah.
So on the inlet side, yeah. It's a warmer water and calmer.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Gulf in general is going to be pretty calm to begin with most times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of these points that we've made, especially almost any park around the panhandle, is that it's very dynamic. You have one hurricane that will come through like Irma or Michael, and that can just do some very significant damage and change the makeup of that park for the long term. So is this something you want to visit? I would, in thinking about it and considering it, I would make it a priority, because I have drugged my feet on visiting some parks in that region, and there's certain things that I just won't see in my lifetime, like an expansive tree canopy of, you know, something like this old growth. I mean, if there is any old growth there, but yeah, a lot of these parks there just have no trees where they were actually very famous for having, you know, a very big canopy. So something to think about.
Yeah, just it's a quite a bit further south, but Del Norwegian's down by Naples. It was this when Ian came through. They're saying probably 2 years before that park opens back up. So, you know, see it when you have the opportunity.
Now, that was a beautiful park, too. It's very sad. It was one of those where you go to the parking lot. The parking lot kind of runs down the length of the beach, but there's this vegetation that separates it. So as you walk out into it, it's like walking out to another world when I saw it. And having that gone is just, it's heartbreaking. But I'm glad I got to see it.
They'll get around to cleaning it up, I'm sure. They do have like a set timeline. They just got to, I guess it was piles of sand that ended up in areas where sand typically wasn't. And you know what? We kind of started talking about how hurricanes change these things, and it's all part of our natural cycles too.
Yeah, that's definitely it. So these are some of the parks that are very unique to in this area of Florida. If you visit beaches around Florida, they have very distinctive features. The dune lakes, the sand, the beautiful waters. That's something that's that you can pretty much almost only find in this area of Florida. All right. Any last thoughts?
No. Just visit while you can. Enjoy yourself and watch out for all the golf carts because it seems to be very popular in the Panhandle.
Oh my gosh, don't even get me started. I had one and it had a license tag on it, so I don't know what the licensing requirements of it were, but I was trying to get somewhere and this guy was hugging the center line going a nice 15 miles an hour in a 35 on a double line trying to not let me by, and I was just like they're everywhere. I think it's something that I think started at the Villages and it has spread like a plague all over Florida. I mean, some of these.
This is pretty much Southern Alabama more than it is Florida, and I think think that lots of Alabama tags. Maybe the golf carts are more popular up there.
They're not golfing. I know that much.
No, they're drinking.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone to some state parks that aren't that popular, and that I've been to, you know, a few times. Or a lot. You see these ruts on the side of the road, you know, off the cement in the, you know, in the natural environment of where they're constantly driving these golf carts. So, yeah, I don't know. Get out and walk, I guess.
Well, someday maybe we can open up the state park trails for the golf carts, too, and they can.
You know what? Why don't we add golf courses in state parks?
Yes, great idea.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever thought of that one before. All right, that's heavy sarcasm. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening in and enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.